Fancy a game?
We don't want your fancy life-changing career starting moving out of my parents' house college education.
Oh, man.
How embarrassing was that for us?
Oh, my God, was it embarrassing.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
Hello, Max Andretti. He's back today, probably, maybe. We'll talk to Dave Gosier, play-by-play guy for the Golden Knights on AT&T Sportsnet. They are in Anaheim tonight, second half of the show. All Golden Knights. We're a hockey town. We'll get to some Raiders as well. But UNLV is where we're starting. Optimistic today, Jared. Optimistic today. Because you know what?
Wyoming's dreadful.
Yeah. And so are like the next five teams they play. They have the easiest schedule. The easiest schedule you could have to start Mountain West play. And not just because the Mountain West is bad. They get the worst teams in the Mountain West. So they already played Colorado State. Bad team. Wyoming is at home. Bad team. Then to New Mexico. Average team. They go to Air Force. Bad team. Home against San Jose State. Really bad team. And then New Mexico again. So you already want to know. You beat Colorado State. And to give you some perspective, the KenPom number here. Colorado State is 244 in KenPom. Wyoming, Air Force, San Jose State, all worse. Colorado State was so bad that UNLV beat them while shooting 38% on layups.
Okay.
And three of the teams they play coming up are worse than that Colorado State team. So the only real question, well, I shouldn't say the only question. The big question there is the New Mexico games. Like, what do you do against those teams? Because New Mexico's 7-6, like UNLV. They've got some bad losses. They lost by 45 to New Mexico State. They've lost at home to, like, North Texas and Penn. And we've been over this. UNLV, take out Nevada. UNLV can beat anybody in this conference. UNLV can lose anybody in this conference. But UNLV should have a good record to start conference play. Like, six games in, they should be 4-2 at the worst. Like, if they're 3-3... 2-4, something like that, this is not going to end well. This is going to be really, really bad season if they're not 4-2 or better after six games. Because these teams are bad. Here's the thing. Again, 38% on layups, and they beat Colorado State. They did not play well against Colorado State, and they beat Colorado State. Wyoming, Air Force, San Jose State are all worse than those teams. So what that means is UNLV doesn't have to play well for the next five games to win. They just kind of have to not be terrible. Make like 42% of your layups or something. Like, just don't suck. And they'll win four of their first six games in conference play. So like, UNLV should have a really good record to start conference play. And they need to, because after those first six games, it's at San Diego State, home against Nevada, at Utah State, at Boise State, home against Fresno State. They could very easily go 0-5. Like, they could start... good chance. UNLV, 5-1 to start conference play, 0-5 in their next five games. Probably what the... You know, if you're like, okay, they're going to be favored or whatever, that's probably how it's going to end up working out. Now, they'll end up losing to Wyoming or something, and then they'll go win in Logan, Utah, or something like that. But, like, there's a good chance this team starts 5-1, and then all of a sudden they're 5-6. And then the good news is that you get Air Force, Colorado State, and Wyoming, and San Jose State all again. That's the thing. There are four dreadful teams in this conference. UNLV gets to play them all twice. That's eight wins. Like, just beat the terrible teams, and you win eight games in the conference.
Except for, and I was talking about this with a friend of mine, going to places like Laramie sucks.
Yeah, but those teams suck.
I know, but there's the level of boredom that the players
You're on a business trip.
Sit in your hotel.
That's right.
Go to the Applebee's and come back.
All right, here's some teams that have gone to Laramie this year and won. UC Santa Barbara, Niagara, Northern Colorado, Denver, Boise State. All those teams have gone into Laramie and won. Like, I know, it's hard to get to Laramie. It's a real thing. This conference is a terrible place to have to travel to. But Wyoming's bad. Like, this is a really bad basketball team that's coming to UNLV. And same with Air Force, same with San Jose State. They're all just bad basketball teams. And they play, so Wyoming, 7 o'clock Saturday. It's not on CBS Sports Network. It's on ESPNU. There is a game before it, though. So you nervous? You're going to miss 11 minutes again?
No, I mean, I always catch everything because I'm in the studio. And
John Sandler, Robert Smith.
Yeah. And,
paint a beautiful
and
picture.
Steve Cofield.
And Steve Cofield updating us on J.D. Page's weight gain.
Is it bad that, like, him telling me that, like, while I'm working the board, I'm genuinely like, oh, that's interesting. He only gained that. That's really fascinating. I should keep that in mind for a random player that.
What is the average weight gain of a college student?
I'm on
freshman
it.
Year to senior year. Thank you. That should keep you busy.
Trying to do a show over here.
No, I'm just getting you away from the mic. Oh. The good news as far as the whole television setup is that ESPN actually has other channels to start UNLV on. So, like, if the Nevada-New Mexico game, which is on before UNLV, if it runs long, they can start UNLV on ESPN News, and all you have to do is take your remote and hit, what, like, channel up or down one? Boom, you get to watch it. But, yeah, Wyoming, my God, this team is bad. They're 4-10. I gave you their home losses. These are their wins this year. Grambling, Richmond, South Carolina, and Dixie State. They needed a buzzer-beater three to beat Dixie State, who is not a Division I team. But those are their wins this year. Somehow they beat South Carolina. South Carolina is probably the worst team in the SEC, but still is better than Wyoming, or should be better than Wyoming. So yeah, they're not good. They're 254 in KenPom offense. They're 253 in KenPom defense. They have one player. One player, his name is Justin James. To give you a little bit of context on how much Justin James means to them, he has taken 239 shots this season. The next two players combined have taken 205. So Justin James is the offense. He shoots threes, only 26% though, so make him do that. But he does shoot a lot of threes. He gets to the free throw line a ton and has played 94% of their minutes. Justin James is just about all you have to worry about. But they do have shooters. And that to me is the big concern. Like, there is the way UNLV loses this game, because the way they win it is they just show up and play an average game and they beat Wyoming. But the way they lose this game is defensively, where Justin James is surrounded by four shooters, and that's what Wyoming will more than likely do. Justin James is surrounded by four shooters. And if UNLV cannot defend him one-on-one, if that's where they struggle, and they probably will because it's something that this team hasn't really shown they've been able to do, if they cannot guard Justin James one-on-one, what's going to happen is Wyoming will spread the floor, Justin James will beat somebody off the dribble, and UNLV will have to decide. Do we leave a three-point shooter and help in the paint, or do we let Justin James try to finish in the lane? And it's a decision that Wyoming will probably cash in on. They shoot it pretty well from three overall as a team. They shoot, you know, an average amount of threes in total. It's a potential bad matchup for UNLV, trying to guard Justin James one-on-one when there are shooters lining around the three-point line. So there is a big worry, I think, there. Now, that being said, Wyoming hasn't been very good on defense. They haven't been that good on offense either. They're, like, one of the worst two-point shooting teams in the country. Like, they do not finish at the rim. And they have very little interior defensive strength either. Like, they don't block shots. They don't give up a high percentage around the rim. So UNLV, they should score in this game. They should make more than 38% of their layups.
18 pounds. That's between freshman and senior year, you should gain 18 pounds.
You should gain, like,
well, that's the
FDA
average.
Approved.
No, well, that's the average between the ages of an NCAA basketball player.
Oh, that was for players?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Should go.
That information exists?
Yeah, apparently.
I thought it was just going to be some random study on, like, random college kids in a psychology class.
No, for NCAA players between the age 18 to 22, they should gain 18 pounds, and the average, I don't know why this is important at all, but football players should gain 23.
How much did Turbo Beck gain?
Did he gain any, or I thought he kind of sort of just was a plateau?
Okay. So how much has he lost? That's the question. Turbo Beck bringing that 18 number down because he's losing weight.
Well, I think that's sort of baked into the word average. On average, it's supposed to, like, well, okay, maybe it's not supposed to, but on average, they gain 18 pounds between their freshman and senior year.
Make sure you let Steve know.
Okay.
So he can keep his weight loss and weight gaining reporting top notch.
All right, I'll get right on that.
I'm impressed you found that, though.
It took about six different Boolean operators and lots of Googling.
Yeah, do you know who Wyoming's best player is?
Justin James.
Oh, you did a good job of listening while I was talking.
No, I did a podcast with a guy from the Mountain West Wire.
Dang. That's too bad. Oh, well. So, yeah, UNLV, Wyoming. Wyoming's bad. Conference is bad. But there's, like, four teams that are really bad, like, awful. UNLV should beat them all.
Okay, so if I had to sum up what you just said, UNLV, not great, but better than these people.
Yes. Yes.
So I'll get the Minzy saying I love you ready for the end of the segment.
Better than the slop of the bottom of the Mountain West. That's all. But in all seriousness, like, you try to figure out conference record for UNLV this year. There are four terrible teams in this conference, and UNLV gets to play them a total of eight times. Just shoot better than 38% on layups, and you probably win all of those games. And then just beat one other team, and you're 9-9. That's not going to be a good season. I'm going to sit back at the end of the year and be like, they didn't beat anybody. It's a fraud of a 9-9 record. But just do that, and you're 9-9, and it's the best UNLV Mountain West record in 5 years.
I mean, there's also the assumption that, I mean, they split with Nevada last year.
That's right. You just got to get one of those Martin twins hurt, probably both of them this year, because Jovan Mohring's not here to rein in 35 points like he was last year.
Yeah.
I miss Jovan Mohring.
I do, too.
Technically Correct, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Try the VConnect sports betting app. It is the easiest way to bet on sports in Vegas, and it is free to download.
I love you. I love this guy.
There are so many ways to be satisfied at the Orleans Hotel and Casino. Enjoy cocktails and steaks the way nature intended at Alder and Birch. Visit the newly updated Prime Rib Loft. Experience the all-new Bailiwick Gastro Pub to share unique dining selections, try new craft draft beers, and enjoy great live music. Dine at Andori Asian Kitchen for authentic Chinese entrees, or choose from a large selection of sushi and Japanese cuisine. Check out the all-new Copper Whisk Cafe, open 24 hours with a menu that is sure to entice any palate. So savor the latest and greatest variety of flavors at the Orleans.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants.
No, I don't want to go to a party in your pants.
Bischoff's Briefs.
Underpants!
Bischoff's Briefs.
Very well.
Noah Robotham has made 14 of 43 pointers over the last six games.
That is 35%, basically the national average. So not amazing, but closer to what we expected, given that he started the year 21% from three-point range. UNLV needs a shooting, big time, because they don't actually have any shooting.
Well, I mean, Woodbury's taking lots of shots.
Like, I am all excited about the smaller lineup and spreading the floor and how it helps the offense. But Chris Clyburn is 28% from three. Amori Hardy is 29%. Robotham is 28% for the year right now. Tomboy is 38%, but last four games he's only made 28% of his threes. And he took 10 threes against Colorado State. That is a huge number. Only made two of them. They don't have shooting. Like, they don't have shooters on this team. They need Tomboy to somehow stay in the mid-30s. Like, he was up at, like, 50%. That's coming plummeting down at the moment. They need him to stay in the mid-30s, and they need Noah Robotham to get there. Like, they need him to be a 38% shooter the rest of the way. Get Clyburn up to, like, 32% or something like that. What's funny, Bryce Hamilton's actually shooting pretty well from three.
I was actually about to say, what about a Hamilton, Woodbury, Amari Hardy?
Well, Woodbury hasn't made one yet, so.
No, I'm not saying makes. I'm saying shots.
Attempts, all right. Tomboy's got to be out there because yeah. He's the one just throwing it up.
Like, they don't even touch the paint. It's just five guys on the perimeter.
I'm here for it.
Just rein them in.
UNLV is now 326th in the country in three-point shooting. 326. There are 353 teams. 28.8% is what they're shooting. Like, they need threes to go down because this sort of smaller lineup helps you spread the floor, and that helps Amori Hardy find lanes to drive. It helps your big guys get inside the paint without being clogged up. Like, it just helps the offense. But if they continue to shoot 29% from three, and if Clyburn and Hardy and Robotham are all shooting below 30%, teams are just going to stop guarding them. Like, they're just going to say, all right, we're going to clog the paint anyway because you guys can't make threes. And so all of this floor spacing that's great is going to go out the window because nobody plays defense out on the three-point line when you can't make threes. So they need people to make threes. Robotham is probably the guy you'd say that's going to be the one that starts shooting 35, 40% from three. And then you just hope that Tomboy stays there, or you hope that Clyburn gets there or something else.
I'm not sure if this is one of those weird things that you would track or if we have any tracking on it. Do we know Robotham's percentage off the dribble versus catch and shoot?
I do not. There's a thing called Synergy Sports that does track that, but I do not have access to it this year.
Okay.
Had it in the past, and it is a fun stat because, like, Jovan Mooring somehow was better off the dribble.
That is weird.
Yeah, nobody is ever better off the dribble. Jovan Mooring was.
He was also better 9 feet from the line.
Probably.
Than he was 1 feet.
So, yes, it is an important thing to look at, especially if they are going to keep Amori Hardy in the starting lineup and let Amori Hardy be the point guard, because then Robotham's doing a lot more catch and shoot than he is shoot off the dribble. So, yeah, we'll see. But, no, I do not have those numbers. Should have them, but I don't have access. Nobody likes me enough.
I like you, Major Brown. I like you less. DeQuince transfer?
Duquesne.
Oh, yeah, all right. Duquesne. Yeah, that makes sense. Transfer. Mike Lewis has committed to Nevada.
DeQuince.
Well, no offense. That's not how I'd spell Duquesne.
That's how it's spelled, though.
I know, but that's not how I'd spell it. I'd spell it phonetically. D-O-K-A-I-N.
So, Mike Lewis. he's averaged 13 points per game in his career at DeQuince and has shot 36% from three. The interesting thing about this, because transfers and Nevada are the expectation now, his plan, according to Nevada Sportsnet, our favorite 24-hour Nevada television news channel for sports that makes no sense. Reno news channel.
Yeah, they don't send a lot of people down here for coverage.
Get it together, Reno. His plan, apparently, is he's coming to Nevada now. He's going to walk on for the rest of this semester. Now, because he's transferring mid-year, he would be eligible to play in January of 2020. But he's not going to do that. He is going to walk on this semester, get a scholarship next year, redshirt all of next season so that he can play an entire season in, what would that be, 2020-2021. So he's coming to Nevada now. He's going to sit out for a year and a half and then play for a season.
So he's going to be 20, what, five? you went with the better joke.
I cannot remember who I saw it on Twitter from. Nevada's starting lineup is older than the Phoenix Suns' starting lineup this year.
Oh, my God. Do we have to do the old, would Alabama beat the Cleveland?
Would Nevada beat the Phoenix Suns? Maybe. I don't know. But the interesting part about this DeQuince transfer is that that's a long-term commitment from this guy. He's committing 2.5 years so that he can only play one season. And, like, everyone assumes Eric Musselman is going to leave Nevada. Mike Lewis does not think that, obviously. Like, he thinks Eric Musselman is going to be there for three more seasons.
Or he at least thinks that when Musselman leaves, enough people will leave that it will be the...
My show!
It's the Mike Lewis hour! Names today. The Golden Knights traded Jimmy Oildgildy?
Probably. I don't actually know how to say that.
Okay, to Winnipeg for Ty McGinn.
Yeah, so this is basically an AHL trade. Neither of these guys are on NHL rosters. The Golden Knights gave up a 25-year-old defenseman who's never played in the NHL, and they got back a 28-year-old forward who has 89 career NHL games. I don't really know that there's...
Got older.
Too much to this, like... It's just sort of an AHL trade. I guess Vegas got the better player, or at least the guy who's played in the NHL before. Somehow Ty McGinn's going to get called up and Brandon Peary's going to get sent down. Like, that's going to happen at some point. I don't know. I don't have much else to this. I don't know that there is much more to this, but yeah, they made a trade. Kind of insignificant, though.
So you got nothing.
That's
got
what the briefs are for, yeah.
All right.
See, that's what the briefs were supposed to be. Like, you read a headline and then I talk for like 90 seconds, but instead I like to talk for way longer than 90 seconds.
And I like to ask stupid questions. The Raiders have three running backs under contract for 2019.
Yeah, see, like, this is going to be a long one.
List them all.
DeAndre Washington.
Okay.
Chris Warren.
Ooh.
Mike Allstott Jr. And James Butler.
Okay.
Butler was one of the guys signed to those future reserve contracts, yeah, like Nathan Peterman. So
Peterman and Butler, Vegas.
So yesterday we talked about the holes the Raiders need to fill, and I was like, huh, if they hit a bunch of home runs, they could actually win like 8 or 9 games next year. But running back is sort of interesting because you've got Jalen Richard and Doug Martin as free agents. Conceivably, you could re-sign one of those guys. Marshawn Lynch is retiring, right? Like, he hasn't said that, but everybody's just assuming he's retiring.
If I'm Mark Davis, I would give him either the Dwayne Wade contract of come back and you can play whenever you feel like playing, or the, you know, go, you're now the vice president of shaking season ticket holders' hands.
Like, I want as much Marshawn Lynch as I can. So, like, if we're choosing here,
make him the offensive line coach. Just run through a mother bleeper's face.
I want Marshawn Lynch. Like, those are the options. I want Marshawn Lynch. But I'm assuming he's retiring. That's sort of the assumption I think most people are making.
Well, we can't drug test him because he's lighting things.
From the torch?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Get a suspension there. DeAndre Washington, Chris Warren, James Butler. They've got to get a starting running back, right?
No, I think you could probably pair those three to get... If the Chiefs and the Steelers have taught me anything, it's that unless you have Ezekiel Elliott or Todd Gurley, just get some dudes.
But are those good enough dudes?
You got the one who can get you 3 yards or 1 yard every single time, and you probably one of those other two guys can catch.
I mean, that's what DeAndre Washington is. He'd be your pass-catching guy.
So then you're fine.
Chris Warren's the guy that ran for 292 in the preseason, 5 yards per carry, and John Gruden was like, ooh, I like that. Let's stash him on IR for the whole season, even though he's not really hurt. I just
love the way he ran. He ran like a...
I assume they're going to go get a running back somewhere. Like,
yeah,
whether it's to late round draft or it's they go sign Le'Veon Bell.
I was going to say, sign Lexington Thomas as an undrafted free agent.
And do what with him?
Stash him to, like...
Put him on long-term IR for the season?
Until he comes back to Vegas. We love him. I love him.
Okay,
love him.
Signing Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Incredibly stupid thing to do, to waste your cap space on that.
Yeah,
if you're
the $77 million and you're immediately going to lock up, what?
$25 million with Le'Veon Bell. Incredibly stupid. But as somebody, from the standpoint of I host a radio show and talk about the Raiders, oh my God, sign Le'Veon Bell right now.
Trade one of the late first-round picks for AB.
All they want is one first-round pick?
Well, I don't know, but I would. You have three of them.
So you turn Amari Cooper into a first-round pick, then you turn that first-round pick into Antonio Brown.
You may have actually upgraded.
Yeah, that'd be tremendous. Sign Le'Veon Bell. Or, you know what, actually, draft that kid from Kentucky, Benny Snell. I like that guy. He's probably going to be like a mid-round pick. Draft that guy. There's your running back core. But, like, I assume they go get a running back somewhere else to add to that, but, like, they're not going to have good running backs next year.
No, I think...
They're not going to have good. They're not going to have, like... A name running. They're not going to have a guy you've ever heard of.
Yes, correct.
Unless it's Benny Snell from Kentucky. Like, maybe it's a guy you've heard of in college.
Is it weird that I think that Chris Warren could wind up with the, who was it, Michael Turner from the Falcons that one season? He had 8 touchdowns, but, like, less than 100 yards. Just goal line package, just...
Chris Warren's not even that big, though.
I know.
They're just going to make him a fullback.
I'm just trying to, like, I'm trying to conjure this image for him so that way, you know, the legend will get groundwork.
The Raiders have five wide receivers under contract for 2019.
Jordy Nelson.
Gonna retire during training camp.
Seth Roberts.
Never gonna retire.
Saeed Blacknell. Keon Hatcher. Rashard Davis. Those last three, combined career, one catch, 8 yards.
Wait, Aitman's not?
Aitman is not under contract. He was a one-year deal, I think.
Okay, yeah, weird. I thought he was a rookie.
So, yeah, undrafted, I think, to a one-year deal.
Okay.
I think. I might have that wrong, but he's not listed as one of their 2019 under-contract guys. Basically, you have two wide receivers there in Seth Roberts and Jordy Nelson. Those other three guys, maybe one of them makes the roster, but you're not really expecting much. Should they sign a free agent wide receiver?
Is it bad that my answer is no? Because I think that the wide receiver depth in the upcoming draft is really good.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. Like, if you look, like, some of the top free agent wide receivers, potentially Adam Humphries, Golden Tate, Robbie Anderson, Dante Moncrief, Randall Cobb. Those names aren't that exciting right now. I think if you're the Raiders, I would much rather see them draft one. Like, you've got the two guys from Ole Miss and A.J. Brown and D.K. Metcalf. You've got Keneal Harry from ASU. I don't know how to say that guy's first name. I don't know if it's Keneal in Keel. I don't know, something silent there. What's the guy? Oklahoma's got Marquise Brown coming out. Like, those are some of the top wide receivers that you could get with one of those late first-round picks, maybe even early, your early second-round pick.
Aitman signed a 4-year contract worth $2.5 million on May 15th, 2018.
All right, so they got six wide receivers under contract.
Yeah, it's just very strange that they wouldn't list him under contract.
Yeah, I don't know. I was confused by that. Okay. So they have six wide receivers.
Yeah.
Aitman probably number one wide receiver.
Kind of.
Yeah, I hope they draft a wide receiver late first round, early second. That's
I absolutely think that one of the dudes from Ole Miss could probably walk in and immediately either be your number one slot guy or just be like, go line up, do your best.
You said it, not me.
This isn't so much a brief, but a question. What do you think the likelihood we see Kyler Murray as an Aviator this season?
Probably low, right? Like, even if he decides to ignore football and play baseball, he's not going to make it to AAA this year, will he?
First overall. I mean, he was a first round pick.
They'll probably do the whole AA and then skip AAA and call him up thing just to screw with us. I don't know. I would guess low, but maybe. I'd be excited for it. We missed out on Tebow. At least give us Kyler Murray.
I mean, I'm kind of happy we missed out on Tebow.
Are you kidding me? What do you mean you're happy we missed out on Tebow?
Tebow's a bit much for me.
Who cares? Playing in Vegas would have been tremendous. Tim Tebow jerseys have been awesome.
It would have been, okay, the only thing I would have been, like, there for is if, like, Cheetahs had a Tebow night.
They give away Tim Tebow jerseys and the sponsor on the shoulder is Cheetahs.
Yeah, that would have been perfect.
Hustler Club.
That would have been the absolute, like, that would have been something I would have been here for because I love this town, and that's something we would have frickin' done.
Dave Gosher, play-by-play for the Golden Knights on AT&T Sportsnet, up next.
You're listening to Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff, brought to you by Boyd Gaming. Tyler Bischoff is
Technically Correct, the best kind of correct.
Golden Knights are in Anaheim tonight to take on the Ducks. You can hear it here on Fox 1340, not here, our sister station, Fox 1340, or you can watch it on AT&T Sportsnet. And with us now, the play-by-play guy for the Golden Knights, Dave Gosher. Dave, how is it in Anaheim today?
Not bad, guys. It's, low, mid to low 60s, sunshine, just another typical Southern California day, guys. So far, so good. Give it time, but so far, so good.
So we don't have morning skate for about another hour, and the Golden Knights would have to make a few moves for this to happen. But are you expecting Max Pacioretty to play tonight and Brandon Peary to stay with the team?
Yeah, I would think both, and then it's a question of how do they finagle things to make that happen, which I'm sure they'll be able to figure out. But yeah, I would expect to see Max back in there, and yesterday looked like he was going to be on a line with Cody Eakin and Ryan Carpenter. And I think they're reluctant, and rightly so, to move Brandon Peary off that line with Paul Stastny and Alex Tuch right now. Why would they? You know, they've done some great things since being put together. So, I kind of think that's the direction at least they start the game with and see where it goes from there.
Are you – I mean, I know it's 6 goals in 7 games, so it might be kind of foolish, but are you surprised that Peary has been able to do this much to, like, stay on a second line, and when Max Pacioretty comes back, nope, sorry, Max, Brandon Peary's taking your spot on that second line?
Yeah, well, I think, I'm not really surprised at his production. You know, if you look at it, he's scored in the past in the NHL. I think there's been times, though, that, you know, maybe he's tapered off. He's even talked about, and Gerard Gallant's talked about defensively, there's been times where he's struggled, in previous seasons. We haven't really seen that in his game this year. And I think coaches, the other side of that would be, they're very hesitant to make changes when their team's playing well. You know, the Golden Knights are looking to make it 5 straight wins tonight. So, again, it's not written in stone. Let's face it. I think Max Pacioretty was brought in here to really provide some scoring on that second line, and I'm sure before it's all said and done, you know, he will do that.
How much with Peary, because we've seen, like, Belmar gets moved up to the second line in the final 5 minutes of close games, and they're protecting a lead. Like, how much do you think the coaching staff is, I don't know, protected Peary and, you know, giving him offensive zone faceoffs and giving him better matchups against weaker lines? Like, how much do you think they've protected him so that that line isn't giving up goals?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think they've done a great job, really, of putting him in a position to succeed. I always kind of compare it in baseball terms. I mean, if you're a home run hitter in AAA and they call you up and bat you ninth, I don't know if that makes a lot of sense. I mean, you know, Brandon Peary's been a goal scorer most of his career. He was leading the AHL in scoring when they called him up for the Golden Knights. He still was leading the AHL, you know, the other day when I looked at it. So, they put him with good players and skilled players. They played him on the power play. But, you know, that's one thing to put him in positions to succeed. He's put in the work to be successful, too. You know, he's been able to score some big goals at big times, including, you know, it turned out to be the game winner against the Kings the other night. So, great to see where they really needed a shot in the arm offensively, or at least needed somebody to fill that void with Pacioretty out. And he's really stepped into it and, you know, provided some big-time results for them.
All right, Dave, we have some audio here, and we want you, after you listen to this, to grade it and let us know if this is the best goal call you've ever heard.
Schmid, abriendo para donde está. Peary saca el disparo, y el portero Campbell le para una Peary. Increíble. Una vez más, Peary para Nate Schmid. Con el disparo, ahí está el bloqueo. Una vez más, el disparo. ¡Gol! Con otro gol, señores. Ahí está el número 73. En un tira-tira, por finmente queda a su disposición el post. No se la piensa, saca el disparo por el costado izquierdo del portero Tiago.
So that is Jesus Lopez on ESPN Deportes. Best call of a goal you've ever heard, right?
That's awesome. My man Jesus. Other than Peary's name and the word goal, I didn't understand any of it. But the energy is unbelievable. I love every once in a while I'll hear his clips, and he's phenomenal. His energy, and you know, I get a huge kick out of it. I always joke around with our radio guy Dan Duva. I say, of the three of us, there's no question that Jesus is the best. So that's awesome. That's great stuff.
Have you talked to Jesus at all?
Oh yeah, we see him every home game, and you know, obviously they don't travel for games in the regular season, but yeah, we see each other pretty regularly at home, and you know, I just love his energy and how much he brings to it. Just you know, that's infectious. I think you can tell when people enjoy what they're doing, and especially when they're broadcasting games, and that comes through when he calls them.
So we've had him on before, and he just did Greg Wyshynski at ESPN just did a story on him and some of the other Spanish play-by-play guys. My favorite thing about it is that he was like starting to do it, and he was like, nobody's done this before, and there are things that happen in a hockey game that they don't have Spanish words for. So he just used phrases like ham sandwich and they're chopping onions. Like he's just making things up as he goes, and it just seems terrific all the way around.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, look, yeah, a lot of it is just reacting to what you see, and yeah, if they don't have phrases for it in Spanish, then why not? You know, why not make up something else? But yeah, I think it's great, and I think there's more than enough room on the train for people like Jesus, and you know, that are broadcasting it in Spanish. I think it's fantastic.
You guys need to let him come do a period on AT&T Sportsnet.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that. Last season, and I can't remember which, it might have been Carlson's goal between the legs, the goal against San Jose. I want to say somewhere along the way, we pulled the audio of his call, and we came out of a break with it. It might not have been that goal, but it was one of the goals last year. And I thought it was awesome. Yeah, I don't know if he'd want to do a period. I don't know if I'd let him in the booth for a period. I might not get back in. Maybe just a quick segment would be good.
Okay, so it's Dave Gosher and it's Shane Knighty. Oh, wait, I wanted to ask you this question. Do you prefer, is Shane Knighty better at his job when he is with you in the booth or between the, or down ice level between the benches?
I don't think he's really that good at it in either location, to be honest with you. Shane's awesome. He's the best, man. I think that if you were going to, in full disclosure, he probably likes it more down at ice level because it's a whole different feel for the game, right? I mean, you can, you know, you're in between the benches. You can hear some chatter. I think the biggest thing you lose upstairs is the pace of the game and how fast things move down there. When you're upstairs, you're a little bit disconnected from that, whereas opposed to when you're at ice level, you're right in the thick of it. So, you know, I think if Shane had his druthers, he'd probably be down there a little bit more. I know it's not always possible, but I meant when he's not in the booth, I kind of miss him. Like, just, you know, our banter during commercial breaks, and it's a little bit more difficult when I'm upstairs and he's downstairs. But either way, he's fantastic.
But you're cheering for him to get hit by a puck every game he's down there, right?
Yeah, well, keep your head up down there. Like, there was a game earlier this year. There was a national game in Canada. Ray Ferraro was doing the color down there for Sportsnet in Canada, and a puck came into the, you know, where they were standing, and Shane kind of bailed out into the corner, and Ray Ferraro had a great line. He goes, "It's hard to believe I used to be afraid of this guy when we played against each other," you know? So Shane couldn't have got out of there. I would, hey, the heck with that. I'm not going to stick around and get a puck in the face either, though.
Will you let Shane Knighty dress you?
Well, here's the thing. You know, and Shane would be the first to tell you, and most of my previous life, I was radio a long time in Boston, so, you know, it didn't really matter what I wore. I could have worn a sweatsuit up there, and nobody would have known the difference, but if you hang around with him long enough, a lot of that, his style and his flair for dressing kind of rubs off a little bit. So I've tried to pick up the suit game a little bit as best I can. Nobody could really compare with some of the, I call them his costumes, the Knighty collection. Some of the stuff he rolls out is pretty awesome. But I don't know if he'd want to dress me. I think he's just like, you know, you have to wear this, you can't wear that, you've got to wear these shoes. Like, after a while, it's just exhausting. It's exhausting.
He wouldn't even let you hire him?
No. I don't ask for his 2 cents. A lot of times he just offers it. You know what I mean? Like, whether I want to hear it or not. But no, he's his stuff's fantastic. You know, he says he has an abundance of clothes, which there's no question about that.
Tyler obviously covers the Golden Knights, and so he makes it his practice to learn people's names, and then he just hands me pieces of paper that have random hockey players from, you know, Switzerland or somewhere's last name on it, and then I absolutely garble it. What is the name that, like, you've seen on a piece of paper and you went, "Oh God, how am I gonna get there?"
Let me think about it. One of the ones this year that I had to think about is one of those where you have to think about it every time you say it, is Montreal Canadiens have a guy, just Barry Kotkaniemi. And like, good luck. You know, you look at it and there's a ton of vowels in there, there's too many letters. So those are the ones that I don't want to say I sweat it, but when you have to think about it every time you say it, that's where I think I get a little bit concerned. So I'll tell you what I do, guys. I spell it phonetically. Like, I have a chart, you know, like everyone has their own method to the madness. I spell it how I say it, and as best I can, but I'm sure there's a few I butcher, there's no question about it, but speed of the game, you just try to do the best you can with it.
Oh, see, I just roll through and just pronounce it incredibly wrong and just go, yep, all right.
Well, you have to own it, right? Like, say it like you mean it, like, and then hopefully nobody picks up on it, but you know it, or I know it anyways. I'm like, you know, I'll go to a break. I'll be like, I have no idea how I just said that guy's name.
Oh, we turn it into content. Him, Jared messing up names. That is part of the show. That is a very important part of the show.
That's good.
All right. So when you left Boston and you come to Vegas for the first season of the Golden Knights, what was your big reason why? Like, why did you want to come do this job in Vegas and call Golden Knights games?
Yeah, to be honest with you guys, I wanted to do TV. You know, I had done radio in Boston for 17 years, and I loved it, and had a chance to call the Bruins winning a Stanley Cup in 2011, a team that Shane was on. But I had also done radio for 7 years in the minor leagues before that, so that's 24 years of radio. I liked it, but I felt like I wanted to try and do more. And for me, radio was more. Television was more. But that being said, at that point in my career, in my life, I wasn't just going to pick up myself and my wife and just move anywhere. I wanted a unique opportunity. And now you're talking, right? Vegas, great location, great climate, first ever major league team in the city, first ever TV play-by-play announcer for the first team. So there were a lot of things that drew me to it. I think to a degree, maybe I had maxed out what I was doing. I would have continued to do it, and that was kind of the plan. But then when this became an option, that plan changed. So I couldn't be happier. Shane's phenomenal to work with. I work with and work for some great people. And, just being here the last, 15, 16 months in the city, the people have been great to us. It's been fantastic so far.
All right, be honest. You wanted to go into TV. You were like, all right, Golden Knights, expansion team in Las Vegas. Nobody's going to be watching. I can screw up as much as possible. This will be a great place to start on TV.
Yeah, my first fear was heavy makeup. A lot of heavy makeup. more than most would need, put painted on. No, I'll be honest with you. I thought they had a chance, guys, to be a decent team, but there's a difference between decent and playing for the Stanley Cup. Because of the way that the draft was set up, the expansion draft, they were going to have access, much like Seattle is in a few years, to good players. And I think that's the way it should be. I mean, if you're going to spend, in Bill Foley's case, $500 million, or in the case of Seattle, $650 million, I think you should have an opportunity at least to be pretty good right off the bat. Now, that being said, none of us saw this coming. And, a lot of it revolved around, unfortunately, 1 October. And I think the team was really galvanized the community and vice versa there, and they really kind of rolled that wave all season. Before all that, were there some nights you thought, okay, I might have to make chicken salad out of chicken, sure, but that never really happened. They never had one of those real bad stretches last year.
All right, from the Dave Gosher Wikipedia page, it says you did play-by-play for the Boston Marathon. So is it harder to call the Boston Marathon or Alex Tuck and Malcolm Subban playing Fortnite?
Fortnite's much more difficult because here's the problem with Fortnite. I could not have been more out of my element. Like, I had no idea what was going on. We fortunately had a fellow there that he knows the game. Like, Shane and I were there. Like, Shane's got a 12-year-old son, and he tried to give his dad a quick tutorial, and I don't think that was very successful either. So Fortnite was not even close to knowing what I was doing. The toughest thing about the marathon was you're on the back of a flatbed truck going backwards for 26 miles. And they would throw it down to you. Like, we had a main anchor, Gil Santos, the late great radio voice of the New England Patriots. He would say, let's go to Dave Gosher with the men's lead truck, and you had runners from Kenya and Ethiopia coming at you. Talk about names. That's probably where I sweated it out the most, trying to pronounce their names. But that was a tough one. I did those 3 years in a row, and but it was it's a great day in that city, Patriots Day in Boston. And obviously, after the bombings in 2013, I think it's even taken on more meaning for just how special that day is there.
Well, he is Dave Gosher, play-by-play guy. You can hear him tonight, AT&T Sportsnet, Golden Knights against Ducks. Dave, we appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you guys. Take care.
I was not expecting that play-by-play for a marathon. You're in the back of a truck driving in front of the people running.
Very incredible.
Yesterday we had Jake Bischoff on the show. Today we talked to the new coach of a 15th place USL team. Are we hooking the brand of the show up to the wrong thing?
No.
These are the right things?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we sure?
I'm 100% positive that this is our lane.
This is our pathardom.
Well, I don't know about stardom, but this is our path.
All right.
This is, no one else is going to this well.
Okay.
Technically Correct with Tyler Bischoff.
So before we get back into a little bit of Golden Knights stuff, our bet is up with Boyd Gaming. Over-under, highest jersey number to score a touchdown in the national title game on Monday.
Yeah, I actually needed to ask you about this because we don't get paid for a while, and my bank account is in single digits.
Single digits?
I actually thought it was funny that if anyone listened to the press box, Cofield was yelling about IOUs. And I was sitting there going,
oh, you're the IOU abuser.
I would just be like, I wouldn't eat. If the IOU system didn't exist, I would be starving.
So 34.5, that's the jersey number over under for to score in the national championship game. The under is the favorite. Under 34.5 is minus 160. The over is plus 130.
I almost want to do side action and say that it's over and it's Clemson. It's going to be, it's going
to
go.
Oh, you're okay. You're adding an extra element to this prop bet that it's going to go over and it's going to be somebody from Clemson that takes it over. Okay. I don't know what those odds would be. You might be getting even better odds than plus 130 on that one.
Again, though, can I borrow some money to make this bet?
So go. Be connected sports betting app. Bet on the highest jersey number to score in a national title game. It's the technically correct bet. Or go to the Orleans, place the bet, Gold Coast, somewhere like that.
Is the Be Connected app free?
It's easy to download, too.
Awesome.
So Brandon Peary is staying. I love this guy. More than likely, he's staying.
Increíble.
I also love so much that the guy with 6 goals in 7 games was, like, in danger of being sent down. Like, I just can't get over that. Like, you call him up, he scores in every game, basically, and you're like, yeah, we might see, you might not be here. We might need to send you down. Not good enough for us. But the reason it looks like he's staying, and we talked to Dave a little bit just a second ago, he practiced yesterday with the second line while Max Pacioretty practiced with the third line. Excuse me. Oh, burping. That was good.
Gross.
Both of them were on the second power play unit. So that would tend to suggest, again, they don't have morning skate today until 11:30, but that would tend to suggest they're both going to be in the lineup, and that's where they will both play. So if Pacioretty's in the lineup, he's coming off IR, somebody has to go. I still think, we mentioned it yesterday, I still think most likely scenario is somebody suddenly is hurt and somebody else goes on IR. Right?
Yeah, no, I think that's the conspiracy. I mean, somebody is hurt. It's hockey. Somebody who got smashed against something.
It's called a ham sandwich.
Yeah, someone who got ham sandwiched is not 100% and probably could use a couple weeks off.
I am all for manipulating the rules, by the way. Like 100%. Like George McPhee basically wants to try to keep 24 guys on the roster. Technically 25 because Colin Miller's hurt too. Maybe even 26 because Eric Howell's hurt too. You're only allowed to have 23. I am all for George McPhee manipulating this to where he gets to keep that extra guy on the roster. Like all about that. Like that's terrific. You put someone on IR right now and you're delaying the decision. You know, possibly somebody else gets hurt down the road and then you don't have to make the decision, or somebody is, I don't know, Ryan Carpenter, Oscar Lindbergh falls off the face of the earth and you can send them down no problem. Like, I don't know. We'll see. But that to me seems like it'd be the most likely scenario. I think it was Willie Ramirez was on the press box this morning saying 2 p.m. is the deadline to bring Max Pacioretty off IR. So we'll at some point we'll end up with a roster move today.
What is the benefit? How do we have any HALA updates as far as like
only when they get in trouble? Only when Gerard Gallant gets in trouble. That's the only time you're going to get a HALA update, is when the Golden Knights are like, all right, don't look at that. Look at something else. It wasn't his ACL. He had surgery. He's maybe possibly coming back, but he's maybe possibly done for the season. That's it. That's all we know about Eric Hall. So I have no idea. And one day he's just going to show up again, and it's going to be like, oh, that guy's alive. I remember that. Okay, so on this whole Pacioretty peering thing, this whole roster crunch decision-making, do you want to hear Gerard Gallant being completely over being asked questions about the roster?
Oh, I was just going to play it.
Oh, no. Well, so here's the thing. He's actually, since he went out and was like, I'm not commenting on lineups or injuries anymore, he's actually given information on lineups and injuries. Like, he's actually been better since he said that.
Never trust Gerard Gallant. Whatever he says, he's going to do the opposite.
He sucked me back in. But as far as this Peary Pacioretty thing, he is not touching it. He was asked yesterday, you know, Pacioretty coming back, and then there was a follow-up question that you can't really hear in here that's like, hey, do you want Peary to stay? But here's Gerard Gallant just being completely over the situation.
It's not my decision. We talk about it every day, and there's going to have to be a decision made soon, but we'll see where it goes.
Would you like to see him stick around?
Ask George.
Is that a good...
Obviously, he's been outstanding, okay? So, you know, we're going to try and make things work out and do the best we can, and we'll see where it goes.
Ask George, just completely trying to shut that down. And like as much crap as I give Gerard Gallant for always sort of like kicking to other people and saying I didn't make that decision. Ask the goalie coach. Ask one of my assistants. They're in charge of that. as much as that, this one is completely legit.
Yeah.
Because, like, Gerard Gallant's the general manager. Like, this is him making the decision. Now, like, surely Gerard Gallant has some input here. Like, surely he gets to talk to, I mean, he said we talk every day. Surely he gets to go to George McPhee and be like, I think this would be best. And George McPhee is like, okay, like, that, I take your opinion seriously. But in all seriousness, this is, like, not his decision. This is George McPhee.
Just Gallant keep on, like, following McPhee around going, no, I really think we should keep him. But if we send him down... Like, no. Why wouldn't you try to, like, kind of work the system? Like, there seems to be no other alternative at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you can put Oscar Lindbergh or Ryan Carpenter or Tomasz Nosek through waivers. Lindbergh has a pretty bigger contract. It's not massive, but it's not, you know, the $700,000 that the lower end scale of the NHL contracts are. So, like, you could potentially sneak Lindbergh through, like, get him through waivers. Now he's in the minor leagues and now you're fine. But they're petrified of losing Oscar Lindbergh or Ryan Carpenter for nothing. Like, they do not want some other team to pick him up and then all of a sudden he scores one goal in 40 games for that other team.
I mean, thank God they don't have to deal with this expansion draft. They would just be panicking.
Jordan, he would lose his mind trying to avoid the expansion draft. He's going to lose his mind just trying to work the system of the expansion draft, because he's going to be over here like, I don't have to lose a player, so I'll help you out, whoever needs help. Like, it's going to be great. George McPhee, expansion drafts. He's going to make his whole career. He already had a career in Washington. He's revitalizing it just based on this stupid expansion draft stuff. Retract the Kings instead.
Yo, suck it, Tyler!